Okay, so I'm Fred Douglas from EMC Backup Recovery Systems. I'm going to talk about joint work with several of my colleagues in the Princeton lab and Hongwei Shan, who's a student finishing up at Case Western Reserve University. And as Arkady said, I have a few slides just sort of discuss backup in general. For many of you, this will be old hat, and I apologize for repeating things you know, but I want to level set for anybody who's not familiar with some of this. So in a typical backup environment, we have the application host talking to primary storage and going through some sort of media server that's talking to a backup appliance, which is going to be backing up the actual data. And the media server is going to aggregate the files in a way that accumulates the various files into something larger, which is more like a tar file. So from the view of the backup appliance, which is the focus of all these talks, we're looking at aggregated files, not the individual small files that we see in primary storage. I'll point out a couple of other things here. We might have a bypass that the data doesn't go through the media server. That's not really going to be important for the talks we're hearing today. What will be important is that the data backup appliances can replicate to other backup appliances for disaster recovery. That'll be the focus of the next talk. And another aspect of this is all the external storage, the shelves that attach to the backup appliance, and the amount of disk and the enclosures and everything will be the focus of the last talk in the session. The controller, which sort of is the front end for this backup appliance, has some limits to its DRAM cache, maybe fairly large, but it still can't cache everything that we have here. And so caching is one area that's been of great interest in research and deduplication systems, and something we're going to be talking about later in this talk. So when we back things up, we might have some sort of a hierarchy with a bunch of files, and over the weekend, for example, we might do a full backup with a very large tar-like file, as I said before. And when something changes, we have an incremental file, which is going to be smaller. The 1 gigabyte might be the report.powerpoint and a bunch of other files that have changed in the one day since the last incremental. And the next weekend, we go back to a full backup, and we keep all these full backups for some period of time, weeks, months, what have you. And the thing to note here is that the full backups keep sending the same data again and again to the appliance. And so even though a small fraction of the bytes may have changed, at the logical level at least, we keep sending the same data into the system. So I'll give one slide talking about the EMC data domain backup appliance, which is the focus of these three talks. It's what we call a purpose-built backup appliance. And so the idea is to identify duplicates and replace the duplicates with references. This is done by content-defined chunks, which is fairly well known. I'm not going to go into any detail here. But basically the idea is that we fingerprint the chunks with a secure hash, we check the hashes against what's been stored, and there are various tricks for keeping things together that might be accessed together. So the paper by Zhu et al. And Fast a few years ago is one example of that, the sizzle technique for data domain. Generally speaking, data domain and many other similar systems will claim things like a 5 to 20-fold deduplication ratio, a 2x compression ratio. On top of that, that's the gzip style compression. And so we're getting about 10 to 40 times total data reduction. And this depends on all sorts of factors, especially things like retention. And finally, the deduplication ratio is basically the ratio of the pre-deduplication data over the post-deduplication data. I'm not going to talk much about regular compression for the rest of the talk. So I call the pre-duplication data the logical data. That's what's being fed into the deduplicating system. And then the post-deduplication is the physical data. That's what's actually being stored on it after we've done the deduplication. So with that background aside, let me talk a little bit about the purpose of this paper. So the motivation here is that there have been lots of studies of primary storage systems, what we use day in, day out for our regular file system accesses. There's been very little characterization of backup data in the wild. When we think about estimates of 8 exabytes of data being stored on purpose-built protection device appliances in a few years, it says this is a large market that we need to analyze more carefully. The other thing is that the backup statistics used in papers and in marketing literature tend to be somewhat single dimension. So we'll say things like, our backup systems average 10 times deduplication. When we do an optimization, we'll take a particular system comparing against a particular other system using a particular data set over a particular period of time and say, look how much better it is. And that's what we can do, but it would be nice to have more data sets and other things that we can analyze. So the purpose here is twofold. We wanted to be able to analyze past design decisions, look at what the data domain system did in light of all the systems that are out there and how they currently behave. and also provide data that can be used for future analyses. So we're looking at this in two respects. One of them is a broad study where we looked at auto support data. This is things that the system sent into data domain that on a regular basis, usually every day, that say what their statistics are. And we look at the auto support data and we're comparing that against primary storage systems whenever possible. This is using the data by Meyer and Bilowski in FAST a year ago, that looked at Microsoft Workstation data. We also do a deeper analysis of a smaller number of systems. So we wanted to go beyond those initial statistics and instead look at anonymized metadata. I'll get to that in a moment. They come from both customer systems and internal systems within the company. They were done by specific agreements, so we only collected these things when people signed off on something that said we were allowed to do it. And what we did was we collected the data, we then generated a time-ordered representation of the file. So basically, here are all the files on the system, and here are the here's the rate or the order in which these files were stored in the system, so we can replay them into the storage system. And we looked at two things specifically in this study. We looked at the impact of varying the chunk size, and we looked at the impact of different caching policies. And I'll talk about those later. So first, with the broad study for the auto supports, we looked at about 10,000 systems that send their data to a centralized repository within data domain. These include statistics such as deduplication and compression, the amount of storage being used, the number of files, the age of the files, the rate at which they're being replaced, and so on. And we took these auto supports from a single week last summer. We excluded things that wouldn't be all that interesting, namely very young systems that really hadn't been around long enough to be of interest, or ones that were so empty that we thought they weren't really being seriously used. For the metadata collection, first question is why metadata, why not just looking at the data? Well, there are two reasons. One is the size. We couldn't really store in our systems the many terabytes, hundreds of terabytes per system to analyze. And the other thing is people didn't want to give us the raw data because we would have too much insight into what they have, even within the company, let alone with the customer. So to preserve the privacy, we would have to do something special. The kinds of metadata that we collected were per chunk and per file. Per chunk were things like fingerprints, the size of the chunk, and where it was stored, namely what container on disk. And the per file was the comprising fingerprints, which fingerprints are in the logical file that goes. So, and then lastly, for the chunks, we also did sub-chunk fingerprints. So we looked at the raw data while we had access to it on the system we were collecting data from. We then chunked it at a smaller size using the same content-defined chunking approach used normally, and then stored just those fingerprints. So we're looking at the physical chunks, the post-deduplication chunks, so we keep down the total data rate, but we're looking at the logical level files, so the original files that are being stored, all these backup files. To ensure privacy, we anonymize anything that can be traced back to original data. So the file names, the paths, the fingerprints, anything that can be traced back to original data goes through an extra level of anonymization. So now let me talk about some of the results. We have sort of the forest and the trees. Here, the forest view, the broad view, is the auto support analysis. So the first question is, how do backup files compare to primary storage files in terms of total size as a function of the how large those files are? So I'm going to build, for this one, I'm going to build it out slowly so you get an idea of what these graphs look like, and then for the other ones, I'll just sort of throw all the data at you at once. For this one, the y-axis is the percentage of used space, so this is a histogram where how many systems or how many files are in files of a particular size. And the x-axis is anywhere from zero, it's basically a log axis, 0 to 1K is the leftmost bucket, 500 gigs and above is the rightmost bucket. And what we see here is that the point in the middle here, let's see if I can draw here, the peak is around 20%, files about 5 to 10 megabytes in the primary system. Okay? We can also do a cumulative distribution. So on the right axis, I now have the total cumulative percentage of used space. And we see that the median for the primary is 22 megabytes, marked by an X over here with the arrow. And the mean is 3 gigabytes, which is marked over here. Now I add in the backup data. What we see here is that the median is 91 gigabytes. The mean is 268 gigabytes. And I can mark them, actually. And so what we're seeing here is that the backup files are orders of magnitude larger than the primary files. The optimizations you would do in a primary storage system, such as embedding data in inodes, things like that, you don't care about for a backup system that is working with things at the level of these aggregate tar files. And so what we really want to do is a file system that does things like large allocation units. Another question is, how sparse is the file system hierarchy? So looking at things like file and directory counts. This one is the file counts. There are other, many other graphs in the paper I'm not going to be presenting here. And so what we see here is the median for backup is 14,000 files per system on a system. The primary is 117,000. So the primary has an order of magnitude more files than the backup system in terms of the median. On the other hand, the mean is a very heavy tail for the backup. We have the mean is 670,000 versus 225,000 for primary. We think that's the result of some small number of systems with very, very large numbers of files, where the backups aren't being done by aggregating into really large files, but instead treating them as primary storage for whatever reason the owners of those systems might be using. So the bottom line here is that we have a lot fewer files and fewer directories in backup systems than in primary, and it's also a flatter hierarchy for backup. And there are reasons for this. For example, the fact that the backup software uses a catalog and it's not organizing things in this sort of deep hierarchical fashion the way that humans do in a standard file system. Another question here is the rate at which data goes in and out of the appliance. So for this, we're just looking at the backup system. This is the logical churn is the backup files that are added and deleted and added. So the question is, over a given week, how much of the data is coming and going? And what we see here is 17% at the median, 21% mean. So roughly a fifth of the data across these different systems is being replaced every single week. So this means that we need to be able to reclaim huge amounts of data regularly. So it means garbage collection is very important. It's also notable that deduplication has some influence here, because this is at the logical level, but the physical level, we are something that's written once and then not modified doesn't actually have to move on the disk. So it's not like we're actually removing 20% of the blocks on the disk. So another question is, how well does the system deduplicate in general? How much deduplication are we getting? To compare against the Microsoft study, what we have there is a primary study, which is an aggregate across a number of systems. I think it was 857 or something like that. And so there was a single snapshot which said, okay, across all these systems and all the individual files on that these data sets, they got threefold deduplication, because a lot of the system files were in common across them. And then looking at four weekly fulls on each of the systems individually, they were getting sixfold deduplication across these fulls, which they considered to be representative of backup data. For the backup data, we see here is a median around 8.7 times and a mean of 10.9 times. So again, we're seeing about the tenfold deduplication that is typically quoted. But this is a much broader study, and since we're categorizing 10,000 data domain systems. Another thing to note is the heavy tail. So there's some systems that were getting 60-fold deduplication. The maximum across any of them was 384-fold deduplication. So now I'm going to move on to the content analysis, the metadata. So we're looking at the sensitivity to a couple of different parameters. So one question is the chunk size. So what is the right chunk size for a system given the data on that system? And is there a way to evaluate that data, that chunk size, without actually looking at the full data and rechunking it from one size to another to another? The other is to look at different alternatives for caching. So what is the right cache unit in a system like this? Before I go into that, I'll describe the data sets that we collected. So in the paper, we describe 8 data sets. They're listed here by the terms that we use there. The sizes ranged from 4 and 5 terabytes all the way up to 200. These are sorted by deduplication. So we see the top one had 14-fold deduplication, the bottom one only 2-fold. So it's quite a spread. And it's very illustrative to look at the median age here, the number of weeks that the average data is on any given system. And that also varied all the way up to 13, almost 14 weeks, but as little as 0.2 weeks. And so let me highlight some of the things here. One is that I used half of them. The purple data sets here are the ones that were used in the chunk size experiments. The one that had 14-fold deduplication, you might think because of the number of weeks, you wouldn't expect to get the kind of deduplication, but this is actually daily full backups that are being retained for 5 weeks, plus some extra long-term monthly backups. And so collectively, we wind up with 3.5 weeks, and we wind up with this very high deduplication rate. In the other extreme, we have something which was daily fulls, but they were retained only 3 days. And so on average, we only get 2x deduplication. So now, to look at varying the chunk size, wanted to be able to analyze deduplication rates without actually having access to the contents. So this is done by collecting the fingerprints at 8K, the standard 8K chunk size, and this means 8K, an average of 8K, right? It's content-defined chunk size, and an average of 1K subchunks within each of the actual 8K chunks. We merge the 1K chunks into 2K or 4K, we merge the 8K into anything larger than that, and there's a content-defined merging technique described in the paper that makes these merges repeatable. When the same content appears, you're going to wind up with the same merged chunks. When I consider the impact of the metadata overhead, which is very important as the chunk gets smaller and smaller. So the per chunk overhead decreases the effective deduplication, but it adds to the memory overhead. And so, and it adds to the memory overhead. The other thing is that the as you have higher deduplication, the smallest chunks you have sort of the highest relative overhead. It takes up the largest fraction of the overall of each chunk. So a rule of thumb that people have used is, and this has been reported in things like a paper by Kai Lee about a year ago, a rule of thumb is 15% better deduplication every time you have a smaller power of 2 in chunk size, but doubling the metadata. So if we look at what we see here, this graph here is deduplication as a function of chunk size for the 4 data sets. It factors in both the chunk size and the metadata overhead. And what we see here is that the best deduplication is around 4K, but the 8K is so close to 4K that by the time you factor in the other factors which aren't in this actual deduplication number, namely the data structures, and the cleaning overheads and things, 8K, which is what the system uses by default, is the sweet spot for most of these data sets. On the other hand, there are examples where fine-grained, small interspersed changes are going to see better improvement. So the top one, the MIX2 workload, as we move from 8K to 4K, gets a significant improvement in overall deduplication. As we move to the very far left, we go from 2K to 1K, the metadata overhead dominates the deduplication, and we wind up actually having worse overall deduplication once we factored in the metadata overhead. Now, if we don't factor in the metadata overhead, all of a sudden these curves look a lot better, especially the MIX2 workload. It goes all the way up to 30-fold deduplication. So let me back that up for you so you can compare them. If we look, this is with metadata overhead, this is without. So to the right, you don't see any change because it's such a small fraction, it doesn't affect anything. But when you, as you move to the left, removing the metadata overhead makes a huge difference. This is why it has to be included. The Microsoft study found 87% of the deduplication that you got with using chunk level or block level deduplication, that if you used whole file deduplication, you would get 87% of that deduplication rate. So the argument there was, why go to the trouble of chunk level deduplication when whole file is almost as good? The argument here is that it works for individual files, but if you aggregate the files and you have terabyte files, then you can't do anything whole file. And Bill's nodding in agreement. So people shouldn't draw the conclusion from that study as it applies to backup systems that do aggregation like this. That's the point. So now let me talk about caching. So the memory cache is obviously to avoid disk accesses. And there are two different types of caching that we do. There's writes, where we need to cache the metadata. We want to know whether a chunk exists. And for reads, we want to cache the data because we want to actually pull it back out without having to read it from the disk. The granularity might be at the chunk level, the compression region level, or the container level. A chunk is the obvious case. You access a chunk, you keep it around, or you keep its metadata around, and if you access it again, you have it. In the compression region case, what happens in the system is that it's keeping many chunks together, they're written at the same time, it's compressing them as a single unit, and if it accesses any part of that, it has to uncompress the whole unit to get the raw data. So we could keep just the compression region around, that's what the system does. For containers, we cache all the chunks in a sizzle container together. This is, again, the FAST paper from a few years ago. So for the write path, we're looking at keeping the metadata for all containers. For the read path, we're doing it on a compression region basis. So the methodology here is to replay the trace with different cache sizes. And we start from the beginning of the trace, and then we report the statistics for the last 1/n of the data, where n is the deduplication rate. So the idea is to approximate one full backup. We didn't have the actual backup boundaries to be able to say, okay, we're going to stop here and just do one backup and look at exactly how it is. So I'm going to start with the write results, and what we have here are the containers and the chunks. And for the chunk level in blue, what we see here is that the basically for LRU caching at the chunk level, we need to have all of a backup's metadata in the cache. That's not surprising. And what it means is that if you look at the right, for example, you wind up with a very sharp knee in some of these curves where you have very, very poor hit rates until you get to the point where everything fits, and all of a sudden you have very high hit rates. In the case of the container level caching, it's pretty much flat for the entire time, but the rate at which the miss rate is a function of the compulsory misses for those things that can't be handled through deduplication for the unique data. And so so if we have a higher deduplication rate, we have a lower compulsory miss rate. Now compare this to the read data. I've moved the right one up into the corner so you can compare them. What we see here is that the graphs look very similar, just sort of a different scale on the x-axis. The x-axis in the original one went up to 1 terabyte because we're only looking at caching metadata. In this case, we go up to 32 terabytes because we're caching the actual data from each of these containers. And so what we see here is that it's very similar except for a larger cache. We have fewer compulsory misses because basically when we access a container, everything else in that container is going to be contained once as long as we have a large enough cache. But we do a fragmentation effect, so we have this case over here where if we're accessing too many containers and sort of thrashing those containers, we have to have a large enough cache to keep the containers in memory. If we consider compression region caching, that's very close to the container caching in many of the cases, but in some of the cases we start off with a worse hit rate and we need, again, a larger cache to get to the point where we're not really thrashing among these compression regions. So I'll talk a little bit about related work. There's been all sorts of work on deduplication, Windows 2000, whole file, Venti, and lots of variable chunk deduplication systems, LBFS being one of the canonical references to it. There have been all sorts of performance optimizations, Sizzle I mentioned before, there's been sparse indexing, HydroStore, and so on. And in terms of looking at different chunk sizes, bimodal chunking from a couple of years ago for looking at between two different chunk sizes. In terms of data characterization, most of the related work is in the area of primary storage studies, including the work done for the Microsoft data a year ago. There is a University of Minnesota paper recently, but has much more limited data sets. We're talking about a handful of data sets that are something like 25 gigabytes in size. So to conclude, the high churn that we see in the systems, as presented from the auto support studies, shows that the throughput has to scale with the primary storage capacity growth. Basically, as primary storage systems get larger, we have to keep shoving more and more data into the system on a regular basis as they do full backups, or we have to do something else. Backup systems are very different from primary systems. They have fewer, larger, and shorter-lived files. We need high locality and good deduplication in order to get the kind of hit rates and performance that backup systems will support. We found support for the 8 kilobyte size that had been selected by default in these systems many, many years ago, but based on much smaller studies of actual systems in terms of how they behave. So now looking at this very broad set, we can see that 8K on average chunks are a sweet spot for backups. And I'll leave you with the thought that backup is just not the same as primary, and we need to explore backup workloads more. I'll take questions.
Yes.
It is now.
Okay. I'm Dutch Meyer from the University of British Columbia. I've thought a bit about this paper, and I've decided I really like it. So.
Thank you.
I just have a couple questions. I'll do the quick one. When you say 8 KB chunks average, are you referring to the effective average that you would measure or the statistical average you would expect to get? Because I think they're different measures, right?
They're pretty close. I mean,
did you actually see that? Because one of the things we saw is that if you set your contact chunks so you'd expect to be 8 KB, what you actually get on average is 4 KB because you tend to break on zeros very often.
Break on zeros very often. We don't experience that in our system anyway. I think it depends on how you decide what is a break.
It does.
It's content defined. You don't want, for example, if the all zero block will define a block boundary,
yeah,
then that's going to be a problem for you. The other thing is, again, it may come back to the issue of large aggregates versus individual files. So if on average you have a lot of small files, as you do in your primary study, then many of them, the last chunk is always going to be smaller on average than the rest. And so if many of them, but as you get to, you know, terabytes, then that last chunk is in the noise compared to when your file is a few kilobytes.
Yeah, that's two good points. I did set the chunk boundary to set a boundary on zeros when I did that work, because that's what I saw looking at other papers. That seemed to be the standard. It's interesting if you're telling me that's not right.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think that our system does anything special about zeros.
It depends on where you set. It depends on how you... Well, what is the problem exactly?
Zeros are really common.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess it depends on exactly what you think that average means.
Why don't we take it offline?
So, Jeff Canning, and this time I'm going to identify myself as coming from SNEA, and so you may
guess
what my question is. you went to a lot of work anonymizing this. Can we have it?
I would love to. Thus far, we have not been able to make them available for release. I hope someday we will be able to, but we can certainly not make any promises because we've been thinking about trying to do this for some time and just haven't been able to. What I would say is that if you have a student or anybody here has students who'd like to come and intern with us, they can join us and then have access to the data and do studies on it. But we can't put it in your repository, at least for the foreseeable future.
You heard him, Jeff and Jack.
Hey, did you do any measurement for storage speeds based upon the chunk sizes?
Storage space based
on
storage
speed. Restoration speed.
Speed.
Yeah.
Speed based on chunk sizes? No, we did not look at speed. We didn't look at performance impacts of chunk size in this work. No.
I have one quick question. Oh, okay. I guess I'll introduce myself, Arkady Konevsky from Dell. So one thing which was surprising to me that for the database system looks like the churn on the data was very quick. So is that a characteristics or it was just an anomaly which you discovered?
So we're talking about, sorry, let me go back to the slide you're talking about, I think. This is this one here?
Yeah.
So your question is the median age being lower, or are you referring to?
Yes.
I think the median age being lower, let me get rid of that thing, is probably that, so age here is not, it's not a question of churn in the sense of some characteristic of the data. It's really a function of, do the people making the backups say to retain it for this period of time or for that period of time? So how many backups are they creating before they start deleting backups? And so database systems clearly are choosing not to keep backups very long compared to some of these other regular file systems, your home directories and things like that. So I guess it's quality of the environment, but it's the choice of whoever happened to be running these systems.
It's not characteristics of the system, it is the choice of the...
I believe so.
John Groves from Dell. Just a clarifying question. Are we chunking with Rabin?
Yes.